Studios at WVON. We're your original social media. The Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry yourself. It will get better.
It's got to get
better.
Good afternoon, WVON family, and thank you for sharing a part of your Sunday with us. I am Chinta Strasberg, producer and host of On the Case, and my co-host is Kent Hunley, publisher of 316 Magazine. I'm editor-in-chief of that wonderful magazine. Kent is on the road traveling, so he won't be with us today. This is WVON 1690, The Talk and the Top of Chicago. Your questions and comments are always welcome. Please call us at 773-591-1690. And before we begin, I want to pay some bills and appreciation to Cook County Maria Pappas, Treasurer Maria Pappas, who has an important message for you. She says, stay home. Pay your property taxes at cookcountytreasurer.com. Taxes are due August the 3rd, but you can pay without penalty through October 1st. Visit cookcountytreasurer.com and put in your address to first pay your taxes, second search for $75 million in refunds, third see if you are missing out on $34 million in senior exemptions. So stay home and visit cookcountytreasurer.com. That is a message from Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas, who is sponsoring this show and is called On the Case. We give our condolences to the families of two civil rights icons who died Friday, July the 17th, Reverend C.T. Vivian and Representative John Lewis, two personal friends of Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. and many others. We pray for their families as the world mourns their loss. In helping to reshape and groom the future of youth, Kalama Kale, she is Youth Empowerment Director for the Push Excel program. Saturday announced the launching of the 8-week virtual summer camp that begins on Monday. That's tomorrow, July 20th. The Push Excel virtual summer camp will include activities in theater, archaeology, music, the arts, technology, basketball, dance, and fitness for students ages 7 to 15. So for further information, click on www.pushexcel.org. Rainbow Push Coalition is also continuing to give out food for their food justice program, providing free meals in Chicago and in Silicon Valley to those who are shuttered in due to the pandemic, those living in domestic violence and homeless shelters, seniors and veterans homes, immigrants and refugees. Thanks to the University of Chicago Bon Appetit Management Company, the World Central Kitchen, Volare Restaurant, and Let Us Entertain You. We also give thanks to Reverend Jeanette Wilson, National Executive Director of Push Excel, for initiating the Free Food Justice Program with the University of Chicago, which has now partnered with African-American caterers and restaurateurs and expanded in this food program. Has been expanded by Yusef Jackson, the son of Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., with meals donated by World Central Kitchen, Volare, and Let Us Entertain You. Rainbow Push, since the pandemic began, has given out more than 65,000 meals to people in need. And don't forget, for those needing food during this pandemic, you can also come to St. Sabina Catholic Charities office Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at 1120 West 79th Street. And every Thursday at noon, St. Sabina is giving away big boxes of food with meat in it, fresh meat, in the parking lot of the church. That's 1210 West 79th Street. Thanks go out to Father Michael Fager for hosting a successful outdoor concert in memory of Elijah McClain. He was a 23-year-old black violinist who was killed last year by Aurora, Colorado police after responding to a call about a suspicious black man wearing a mask. Well, McClain wore a mask because he was anemic and got cold easily. He was killed last January. The concert was organized by St. Sabina's violinist, Sarah Zahara, who called McLean a gentle and sweet soul. In a 5-4 decision declaring that much of eastern Oklahoma is an Indian reservation and that state authorities do not have the authority to prosecute criminal cases involving Native Americans, we have on the live line attorney Michael Gabriel, one of the attorneys handling this case. And we will be joined later by Reverend Jesse Jackson and Stuart Anglin, who is a board member on the corporate board from the Cherokee Tribe of Northeast Alabama, and the lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against the federal government for the return of Cherokee lands. Attorney Gabriel, are you there? Attorney Gabriel, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Now, the Cherokees have reached out to Reverend Jackson to help the Cherokee people on their campaign for the Cherokee Trail of Return. They are seeking to recover some of the land that was seized by the United States in the Trail of Tears, as well as fair payment for what cannot be returned. This is a simple quest for long-delayed justice under the Fifth Amendment. And as of 2019, there are 819,000 people who claim Cherokee descent and millions of others with Native American lineage. And the Cherokees are asking Reverend Jackson, who is part Cherokee, to join their Let My People Go campaign. Attorney Gabriel, tell us about the Let My People Go campaign and what's at stake. Why did you choose Reverend Jackson for this?
Well, Reverend Jackson actually is part Cherokee, and he appeared in a National Congress of Indians, which recently Mr. Anglin appeared, and so it was a meeting of the gods, basically. It just all came together because it's something that reaches across the broad spectrum of America. This is basic civil rights. In reality, this is really kind of new too, because this is the first time in the history of the United States that any peoples have brought a lawsuit for the return, especially Indians, for the return of land that was taken by the government, not paid for, and the reason it was taken was to take it out of their hands and give to white people. They actually passed in 1835 the Indian Removal Act, which made it very clear they wanted the Indians gone. They forced them at gunpoint to sell their land at roughly a third of its price and moved them on a death march where up to half the Cherokees and plus the other tribes died. And now we've brought the lawsuit. It's been long delayed because it's taken 180 years to get to this point, going through many courts, different attempts, but we're here now. And what is interesting, what turned what was normally a simple, relatively simple eminent domain case into an incredibly complicated and important civil rights case, is that the Trump administration has asserted for the first time in 200 years that a constitutional right, the people do not have a constitutional right to sue the government for their violations unless the government consents, which completely doesn't about face on the Bill of Rights. Now, sovereign immunity has always applied to federal statutes because the government writes the statute, then naturally they can decide who can sue under it. But the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, was written by the people, not the Congress. And it's a self-executing waiver of sovereign, because it has to. But the Trump administration has asserted in our case that basically the Fifth Amendment doesn't apply because the government hasn't agreed to be sued on it. And this affects everybody.
Because it certainly does. It certainly is. We've been joined on the live line with Stuart Anglin. Again, he is a board member on the corporate board from the Cherokee Tribe of Northeast Alabama and lead plaintiff in the lawsuit against the federal government for the return of Cherokee lands. Mr. Anglin?
I'm here, Chinta. Thank you for having us on today.
Oh, you're welcome. So what is the status of this campaign you have, the Cherokee Trail of Returns, Let My People Go?
So we're looking for proper justice. As Michael said, 180 years, they've been kicking the can down the road, and we simply want to have those lands returned. These lands, much of them are government lands that aren't being used. We just simply want to have that land returned. It should be very simple. The Congress should be able to act and help us. The president should make an executive order for this just to be done. That's my opinion. But when you look at the constitutional issues that are out here, it only makes sense. And as Michael's pointing out with eminent domain, or I'm sorry, with sovereign immunity, this is an infringement upon our rights through the Bill of Rights and the U.S. Constitution. So
right.
It's a two-prong approach. You know, we first need to get things set that it does not get in the way. Congress can help us. We don't want anything to get in the way of anyone's rights. And then
I think we have Reverend
rights.
Jesse Jackson on the line. Patrick, is Reverend on the line?
No, Chanta.
Oh, no, he's not. Okay, all right. We'll try to keep trying to get him. Sorry about that. Okay, continue, Mr. Anglin.
So, well, we're very, very welcoming and excited that the Rainbow Coalition push could help us get the word out of that major atrocity of everyone's violations.
If I can point out for a real quick analysis here. We all are familiar with what happened with George Floyd. And, of course, his family is suing in Minnesota for civil rights. But had he been killed by a U.S. Marshal under this new position, because this is entirely new from the Trump administration,
right,
they would not be able to sue in federal court. That's how pervasive it is. That's how sweepingly new this is. This is a Fifth Amendment violation, due process, taking property, i.e. life and plus personal property, without due process of law. And the Trump administration has said in open court in their brief, the first line of the brief, we cannot sue because the government hasn't given us permission to sue on this alleged constitutional violation. Not that it's alleged. Now, I have to again point out that in 2009, both the House and the Senate issued resolutions apologizing for the Trail of Tears. So they're halfway there already. The next step is just figuring out how to compensate the people. You can't compensate for the dead, but at least the land that they've taken and never returned. And again, just 3 weeks ago, as you pointed out, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the Creeks in Oklahoma get back a third of their land, which was taken unconstitutionally by the government. Again, a constitutional right, and again, there was nothing barring them from bringing the action, but under the Trump administration's new position, the Supreme Court was wrong because they shouldn't have been able to argue that they should get the land back because the government didn't give them the permission to bring up the constitutional violation. I mean, you can see this in virtually every aspect. Another example, which would be say a president now issues an executive order banning abortion. Because there is no constitutional or no grant by Congress allowing them to sue for that violation of their constitutional right, nobody could go to court to argue it. Say another issue on the Second Amendment. A president signs an executive order banning private ownership of guns. There's no sovereign immunity under their argument for the Second Amendment that would allow people to go to court to argue it. I mean, we have a right, but no way to enforce it.
Okay, now you both of you are asking Reverend Jackson to help the Cherokee people on their campaign for the Cherokee Trail of Return. We have on the live line Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson, Sr. Thank you, Reverend Jackson, for joining us. We have on the line Stuart Englund and attorney Gabriel Michael Gabriel, and he is one of the lawyers of that lawsuit trying to get the government to give them back their land.
Congratulations on a great, great victory. Thank you so much for your work.
Do you want to say something to Reverend? I do. Reverend Jackson, I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to be with us today. And we're very hopeful that together we can fix the problems that are out there.
And explain exactly what you want him to do.
It is all over the country.
It is all over the country, sir.
We were born in the sin of genocide and racism and iniquity, white supremacy.
It's been going on far too long.
How long we've been down? All you're in town.
And Reverend Jackson, what we've been asked to ask, what we want you to with your help with, and we've actually written two bills to Congress, and we hope that you could help get them presented to the Black Caucus. The first, the last one, the most important one for the nation, is one we call Access to American Courts. And this would make it clear that sovereign immunity does not apply in any way, shape, or form to a constitutional right guaranteed under the Constitution, which would prevent any president from ever doing an end run around the Constitution by executive order and giving everybody and guaranteeing what I think is already guaranteed in the Constitution, the right to go to court and present their constitutional rights violation claim.
You kind of, remember, we have your brother Hoskins is now on Rainbow Push's board. We want to lock the hip with you guys, okay? Yeah. Hoskins and Kim on our board now. Cherokee Nation.
That's wonderful.
That's great. And the second bill we have is just a straight one that would speed up the resolution of the Cherokee claim by shortcutting having to do the liability, which has already been virtually admitted by both the House and the Senate, and go directly into determining how much land to get back and how much to pay for the land not returned. That would save at least 2 years in litigation over the liability phase, which is really not necessary, and get the resolution a lot faster.
And Reverend Jackson has some awesome attorneys, and they all have copies of your documents that you have sent to us, and I'm sure they're going to be working on it. Reverend Jackson does support this and his staff.
You have an awesome journalist in Trenta Strasburg. Trenta?
Yes, sir.
You guys are telling me, okay?
Yes, sir.
Love you guys.
And thank you so much for being on the case. So let's take the caller. We have Jim on the line. Jim?
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon, sir.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
You know, I don't really know much about your case. Are you trying to say that Trump was trying to help you or hinder you or just kind of neutral in this effort?
To be honest, I'm a Republican, and I'm giving a lot of leeway to the president because it could have been just somebody making a stupid mistake, and of course, being the president, he gets the blame. But the net effect of it, nonetheless, is they've said on the brief that people cannot sue under the Constitution without government consent. That's never been an issue before, and that's got to be addressed.
Okay, because you may recall when Trump first became president, land had been taken from Utah under the, what's called the Antiquities Act by Obama and Clinton, took vast lands of Utah property and transferred into the federal hands, and Trump undid that because he didn't want to have the federal government have so much power. Well, I would think that he would be cooperative as well, but maybe unless you know all the facts, it's kind of hard to say. So it's an interesting case. It's hard to say what's going to happen with people, for example, who might have bought property later, have homes or businesses or whatever. I don't know how you would you know, settle all that stuff.
That's
interesting.
True. And in fact, that's the exact issue that was brought up with the Crete decision by the in the Supreme Court. That was an argument made for them not to return the land, that because it's changed hands, and the Supreme Court basically said that that'll be between the Cretes and the people. But history has shown that they've been able to live together and work together, and the court didn't feel that was an issue not to deny the Indians the return of their land. But it isn't. In our case, it's not the issue. The Cherokee Indians have agreed that they don't want to have happen to the people who own the individuals who own the land now to what happened to them. They are not asking for any land that has back that has not been that has been used. They just want to get the payment in 1835 money, which was one third of what they actually should have got, and the people will keep their land, and it's just the land that has never been used, and that there is no plan to ever use. They want back because it should have never been taken, because under the Fifth Amendment, the second part, which has really hardly ever been litigated, this property can only be taken if it's being taken for the public use. And if they haven't used it in 185 years, that's pretty good evidence that it wasn't actually taken for the public use. And since they haven't paid for it, give it back. It won't cost them anything. That's basically
well, it doesn't sound
right
like
there.
That sounds like a reasonable argument to me, as far as I can tell. Yeah, hopefully everything can peaceful work out. You know, I don't think anybody's going to squawk about it.
Okay, well,
those native lands.
Interesting case.
Thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Lewis. Lewis, you're online. Lewis, what's your comment?
Good afternoon, Ms. Strasberg, and good afternoon to your guests. I got two questions. Didn't those five, Indian Nation tribes, didn't they fight on the side of the Confederacy? The Confederate States of America, didn't they fight on that side?
The Cherokee and
the Cree, yeah. Didn't they fight on that side? And my other question is, didn't they own slaves, and didn't it take to 1866 for the government to sue the Cree and the five civilized nations to free those slaves? Will those slaves receive any kind of reparations for being the slaves of those Indians?
Okay, let him answer. Thanks for your call.
Absolutely. The federal government considers the black slaves of Indians to be tribal members of those tribes. So absolutely, they will share equally with the Cherokees on the monetary recovery that's obtained, whatever it is. And they will also have access as full Cherokee to the lands that are returned to the Cherokee. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Justice is going to be done as much as it can be in this situation. You're absolutely correct. That's a point we've been trying to make as well, that all Cherokees, both black, and I also want to point out it too, you know, Michelle Obama is part Cherokee. She's one-eighth Cherokee. And Willie Nelson and a whole bunch of other people, everybody, there's 819,000 people who were Cherokee in the 2010 census. That's such a huge number. That can determine the election coming up. So if everybody talks gets the word out here and puts pressure on both the Republicans and the Democrats to support the Trail of Return bill, there can be justice. And if somebody doesn't support it, I don't see any reason why anybody should vote for them, be they Democrat or Republican. This is basic justice for everyone. And I'm glad you called, because that was an issue I had on my agenda here to talk in a few minutes. Thank you for calling, Lewis. That's a great call.
Okay, let's go to Frank. Are you still on the line, Frank?
Hey, my sister, good afternoon to you and to your distinguished guests. How y'all doing today?
Okay.
Good, sir.
I just got two quick questions myself, but first I'm gonna let you know that I'm African American and I have great respect for your people, all the Native Americans that was here, because y'all know how to live in harmony with nature and the land. I really respected that, and my grandfather's half Shoshone, so there's Native American in my bloodline too. But I am claiming African American, so I'm proud to be that. My two questions is this: as an ex-Marine, I was stationed in Yuma, Arizona, MCS Yuma. I got to know quite a few Native Americans out there on the reservation and everything. And I was put upon an impression that for the land that was stolen from y'all, every Native American get a reparation check every month from the government for the rest of y'all life from the time of birth. Is that true with you all's tribe? And the second question is this right here, in conjunction with the last caller, seeing how it went down, but even without that, seeing how it went down with the black people here, if y'all did get y'all way with this, I hope you do, okay, if you're being done wrong, would you be willing to share some of that land with Native Black American descendants of slaves, so we can at least govern ourselves locally? Because right now, at least you guys do have your own reservation where you have your own school, your own police force, hospital, et cetera, et cetera. Would you be willing to think about doing that, and or would the rest of your tribe think about doing that also as well?
All right. Thank you for your call, Frank.
Thank you for your service. For the first part on the Indian reparations, that had nothing to do with the Cherokee. And perhaps in other tribes, that is, but for the Cherokees, their land was taken. They were just given a lump sum payment which was about a quarter, really, of what the land was worth. And even then, it wasn't all paid. To this day, I don't believe it was paid. They actually took millions of dollars out of the $5 million payment to charging against what the government accrued in moving them, and which the Supreme Court ordered paid back in 1906. And as late as 1936, the government still hadn't paid, because they weren't giving the Cherokee the right to sue for the balance of that payment. But in the answer to the reparation, no, the Cherokee had nothing to do with that. As for giving some of the land back or sharing the land, I can't speak for all the Cherokees how it comes back, but as Cherokee members of the tribe, they will, anybody of any blacks or anyone else Cherokee descent, definitely, and not even any blacks that were a descendant of slaves that don't have Cherokee blood, would be treated the same. So they would have use of the land, and I'm sure they could. There would be no real problems with allowing them to use some of the land, because it in essence belongs in part to them. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. If we don't get the land back, we can't even talk about who could use it. And that's what we want to try to do, is get a bill passed, so we can save time instead of going a couple of years through this lawsuit. And being an election year, this is the best time to do it, when everybody and his brother wants votes. And this can swing the election to the Democrats, or at least keep it neutral for the Republicans. We just can't reach President Trump to find out his position. We've been unable to reach him by any form to find out how he feels on this. And it's a bit of a shame that he can be sandbagged if this is not his belief.
Do you know how many black Cherokees there are? Do you know an estimated number?
I don't. The census didn't break it. Looking at it from analysis, there were 1,600 Cherokee slaves, blacks, not all were slaves, some were adopted into the tribe in a marriage, but there were 1,600 people of black descent, which would have been up roughly about, say, what, 15% of the Trail of Tears, figuring that upwards of perhaps as much as half of them died on the trail, leaving 7,500. But considering that the population has grown from that to like 800,000, percentage-wise, I would probably say 50 to 80,000. Just looking at normal demographics on that. So that's a sizable number. I'd probably say maybe 10%. So that could be like 10%.
Wow, that's a lot. Now, so what is a blanket check? Do you know what that is?
What do you mean, blanket check?
My dad's side, my grandmother, my cousin told me that my grandmother received a blanket check because she was part Blackfoot. My mother's side, it's Choctaw. Yeah. So what is a blanket check? BLANKET check.
Oh. Okay, what the government had done back then in order to break up the tribes is that whenever they had to pay money for land, they didn't pay it to the tribe, they paid it to the tribal members. So they would divide up the number of people in by the number of tribe and divide the check up and give each buddy a check directly in an effort to destroy the tribe so that the tribe wouldn't get the money. And that's in fact, that's what they did with the Trail of Tears. They took the $5 million that was supposed to be paid, minus all the expenses that they weren't supposed to, and divided it by the number of Cherokees that moved, sent them each a check, with the hope that the Cherokees would never then be able to reform themselves as a tribe, because the tribe wouldn't have had any assets. It didn't have the land, and it didn't have the money.
Mm. Wow, that's terrible. Well, let's go to Art. Art, you're on the line with your comments, please.
Hey, what's going on? How are you young people doing?
Okay.
All right, fine. Hello to your guests. First of all, for black people calling, it's insulting that somehow we want to be hooked up with something. All human beings, all life, the earth belongs to the original man, which is the black man. So I'm not sure when I hear black people say, yeah, I got part Cherokee. No, Cherokee got part black people in you. It's not reversed. So I'm not understanding this. Somehow black people always feel they got to be a part of something when we are the original of all human beings, all the earth, 196,940,000 square miles, land and water belongs to the black man. Everything else comes after that. So I'm not sure when I hear black people call in trying to somehow it makes them better because they are part of something else when you are the original. I'll leave you with that. May God bless.
Thank you. But so our Native American Indians were here first. Columbus, as you know, did not discover America. How could anyone discover land when people, human beings, are already here? And the Europeans who came, they were criminals. They were rejects, social rejects. And they befriended the Indians. They taught them how to plant corn, if I remember correctly, and other things, how to survive the winters. And then they turned on them, and then they killed them. They gave them blankets with diseases on them. I think it was the measles or something like that. And then they scalped them. Can you imagine anyone scalping a human being and bringing the head to as bounty to get paid? Mr. England, please. I'm getting too emotional.
No, I am too. How could anyone go in to a new land not welcoming anything but all the atrocities that you just mentioned? This is just so unfair. It's so unfair. We have to come together in this country and recognize that, you know, even the African-American community that came here, look when they came here. You and I talked about this before. There's a little bit of a misunderstanding. African-Americans were here with the Native American long before.
Long before slavery.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, that's actually true. Slavery didn't when slavery was adopted, there were quite a few blacks that were in the colonies at that time that were free. And you know, slavery developed first like from indentured servitude, and then it found out how profitable it was to have indentured servants, then they went on and added slaves. It's a mischaracterization of history to believe that slavery was founded first. It developed in a very cruel response to the economy at the time, and it was just incredibly rich people taking advantage of incredibly poor people in the most despicable ways possible. And what we're trying to do, at least here at this suit, is to redress the wrongs that we can. And we can't address them all, but at least we can start getting the message out to treat people fairly, correctly. And we are on the march. I mean, the Supreme Court ruled that the Creeks get their land back after over 100 years. We're hoping the Cherokees can get their part of their land back and after 180, and we're hoping that as Lewis pointed out, there can be some adjustments and settlement between and work together between the blacks and the Cherokees, because they are family now. They might not have been family to begin with, but they're family now. There's been intermarriage. There's been all kinds. So now it's time to work together to really help everybody. And this suit will be the beginning of it.
Absolutely. So tell us again about what exactly do you want Reverend Jackson to do? I want to be clear about that.
Well, initially we did the bill for the Trail of Return, just asking the Congress to pass a bill, which would probably follow on after the November election, but people can come on board and support it, that would simply allow the Indians to get the remedy that they'll get through the lawsuit, which is have the court decide what land to be returned, which is any land over 100 acres in size that has never been used without any plan to use. Return it. If the government's never paid for it, so it won't cost them a dime. And to pay in 1835 money with interest for the land that is not being returned. That's the same remedy that the Cherokees will get at trial, but it speeds it up a couple of years because we don't have to spend a couple of years getting the liability determined first. The second bill is the one that just happened, what we just wrote, which is we call the American Access to American Courts. We'd like to have a bill passed making clear to the whole, to every administration in the future, that the Constitution stands as written, that sovereign immunity does not bar individuals from bringing suits on the Constitution. We shouldn't need it. It's never been needed before. In the past, when everybody had a constitutional violation, they went to court. But now the Trump administration is rewriting the Constitution and using an interpretation that doesn't make sense. And
now, did he do that by executive order?
Absolutely.
Oh, well.
Anything can be done. That's the extent of sovereign immunity. I mean, it prevents the government from being sued for anything that the executive does.
But legally, that cannot stand constitutional muster, I'm sure.
Well,
I mean, I'm not a lawyer. You're the lawyer.
No, it shouldn't. But the problem is it could take 2 years to get to the Supreme Court for them to reverse it. And, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg announced just the other day that her cancer has come back. If she were to pass, Trump could very easily appoint a really rock-hard replacement conservative who supports it. And the Supreme Court could go and extend it. You know, this is an issue that the Congress can settle by passing the bill.
So as it stands now, if I wanted to sue the government for a violation of my civil rights, I have to get their permission first.
Bingo.
Is that accurate?
As of about 3 weeks ago, yes. That's the position they're taking.
But they're not going to say yes. They're not going to say yes. I can sue you.
No, I agree. That's going to be our argument in the response that I'm creating, is that the sovereign immunity cannot be used against the constitutional right because it turns a constitutional the Bill of Rights into a Bill of Suggestions.
And that's why you want Reverend Jackson to help you to get the bill, the proposed bill, to the Congressional Black Caucus and to Nancy Pelosi, I would assume, too.
And Jerry Nadler and anyone. Because once it's out there, everybody will see how stupid this position is.
It is stupid. Right, it's crazy.
It is. And this is an election year, so it's got a best chance ever of getting it passed. When everybody will have to say yes or no and put themselves on either supporting the Constitution as written or supporting the Constitution as rewritten.
Well, I do hope you have your people registered to vote. I hope you have launched a voter registration drive, as Reverend Jackson has and continues to do, because this election is to me, is like live or die in America. I mean, we've never gone through what we're going through now. This pandemic is taking out so many people, and the president continues to downplay the severity of it, even though 23,000 Americans have died so far. And millions more have come down with the virus. That and the economic impact of that, we really need everyone on board to be registered to vote. So have you launched a voter registration drive? Or can you join with Rainbow Pusher's voter registration drive? Reverend is not a local man. He is national. He is global.
And that is exactly why the Cherokees have gone to Reverend Jackson, to get the message out, not only on what the tribe is doing, but to vote and to preserve the Constitution, to be, in essence, the face of the Let My People Go Home campaign for the Cherokee. This is important on so many different issues, and not just the Cherokee. Whether the bill for the Cherokee passes or not, the issue that the issue of the Trump administration not allowing people to go to court on the constitutional right violation is so unbelievably important that alone could turn the election by just turning off the independents, which is what he needed to win last time.
That is, if people know about it. I don't think many people know about this.
Well, no, it's so recent. I mean, to be honest, this is only the second radio show we've been on letting people know. I mean, it's being handled quietly in the courts because we can't get the message out. And hopefully, Reverend Jackson can get it to the Black Coalition or the Black Caucus, so then they can see and know for the first hand what's happening, because they don't know about it.
Yeah. He is in support, fully in support of your cause, absolutely. And it affects not just the Cherokees, it affects everybody. And particularly people of color, since the president says that more whites are arrested and abused by police than African Americans. He keeps twisting things because that's totally not true.
And again, the example I gave you for the Black Floyd people family. I mean, if this had happened by a U.S. Marshal instead of a local cop, under the analysis and reasoning of the Trump administration in the last couple of weeks, they would not be able to sue the government in federal court. They could still sue for a 1983 violation against the cop, but they wouldn't be able to go against the government per se, because the government would not have waived sovereign immunity on a lawsuit based on depriving Mr. Floyd of his life. That's an exact point of how it would affect every black in this country right now. I mean, if the government passed a law saying blacks had to be rounded up and put in concentration camps like they did with the Indians, you would not have authority to sue to stop it under the sovereign immunity argument. That's how unbelievably stupid and overreaching that position is.
He definitely overreached his authority on that. Definitely. We have to take a break right now because she cares. Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas has an important message for property homeowners. She says to stay home. Pay your taxes, your property taxes, at cookcountytreasurer.com. That's cookcountytreasurer.com. Taxes are due August the 3rd, but you can pay without penalty through October the 1st. Visit CookCountyTreasurer.com and put in your address to first pay your taxes, second search for $75 million in refunds, third see if you are missing out on $34 million in senior exemptions. So stay home and visit CookCountyTreasurer.com. That is a message from Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas, and she does that because she cares about you. She's a very caring woman, and she supports this program, too, and that's not why I'm saying that. I've known her for years. She does care for you, and many people who have taken her advice have done so and received checks of more than $4,000, including Reverend Jesse Jackson. So, Mr. Anglin and Attorney Gabriel, Michael Gabriel, what is the status right now of your lawsuit?
Well, I will be filing an opposition to the motion of dismiss made by the government on the basis of lack of sovereign immunity consent. And it'll be heard by the government will respond in a couple weeks, and then in about a month or two, The court will make its decision, which I hope would be to allow us to continue with the lawsuit. If not, we'll appeal the denial. But in the meantime, the bill could go forward, because if the bill's passed, ultimately it renders the lawsuit moot and unnecessary anyway.
Now, overall, how are the Native American Indians doing in America? I know that Trump is like drilling on your land for oil. What is the status of that, and what are you doing to try to prevent that from happening?
Well, the Stewart's tribe is pretty much standard for most of the Cherokee tribes, and they're poor as hell. There is the tribe in Oklahoma tribe of Indians is in Georgia, where all their land was taken, and they don't have the land, and it's a really destitute area.
The land that you're trying to get back, is that in Mississippi, Alabama, and what other states?
No, the land that they want back, which was taken, is in Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and North Carolina. Originally, it was around 10 million acres, which is five times the size of the state of Delaware. I mean, it's a massive amount of land. The only land that they want back is the land that's never been used. They can pay for the rest. But the land that's never been used with no plan to use, there's no reason for the government to be keeping it from the Cherokee.
That's true. That's crazy to take land and not use it. So what was the purpose, the original purpose of taking your land in the first place and then driving you out? And describe to us about the Trail of Tears. What happened there?
The purpose of taking the land was to get rid of the Indians. Their location was just it was right in the middle of the country at that time. The cotton gin had just been developed, and all that land started being worth a lot of money for cotton, and they found a lot of gold in Georgia. So bottom line is the white people, and not a majority, it only passed by one vote. The Indian Removal Act only passed by one vote. It was to get rid of the Indians so that the white people could develop the land, despite the fact that the Indians had adopted a constitution and built cities and were doing everything that they were supposed to do to prove they were civilized. And none of it helped. And that's what happened. They took the land and then they had to get rid of the Indians, because now the Indians had no place to live. So they put them on a 2,200-mile death march where up to half of them died.
And where did they end up?
They ended up in Oklahoma.
Oh.
10 years earlier or so, the government had signed a treaty with the Cherokee, giving them some land in Oklahoma, and so they pushed the Cherokees that were in east of the Mississippi over on the land that the Cherokees had west of the Mississippi in Oklahoma.
That's a long walk. What about the elderly? What happened to them?
Well, as I said, up to half of them died.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this almost became a non-issue because if all the Indians had died, there would have been no one left to bring a lawsuit.
Some of the mothers carried their dead children on forward to Oklahoma, the ones that could.
Oh, wow. That is, see, we don't learn that in history. So we're just about out of time. I do appreciate you, Attorney Michael Gabriel, and you're one of the lead attorneys on this lawsuit, and Mr. Stuart Anglin, and you're a member of the board. What's the name of the board?
The board, it's the Cherokee Tribe of Northeast Alabama, and it's the corporate board that I'm part of. So there's two sectors to our tribe.